All right, guys, my name is Rick, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
It's good to be here. It's good to see everybody, and real privilege to be invited. Thank you, Mark, for inviting me. I appreciate that. Ezekiel, great job there, mate. Yeah, you did good. That was quality. I've always felt I'm not supposed to be here. The first day in school, you know, every day in school, pretty much. I would, if I could really pin what was wrong with me, I would probably say, I'm not supposed to be here. I always felt that. I felt that everywhere I went. There was a group of people, and there was me. Very self-centered quality. But I wouldn't have seen it like that. I was just very isolated and uncomfortable. But yeah, I'd like to thank Ezekiel for coming over with me, man. That was nice. We're running a wee bit late there, Mark. Sorry about that. Yeah, I didn't even realize the time. When you called, it was like, damn, we got to get over here. So, we ran there at that Hawaiian burger or something. Not too far from here. But it's nice to be invited anywhere, you know. I felt that to when I've been like, and I've 26 years, my sobriety date's 23rd of April, 1998. Matthew Mitchell is my sponsor, and I, and Pasadena War Memorial is my home group. And that thing I was seeing there, like, geez, I've walked into Starbucks, and the girl said, like, welcome to Starbucks. And I've got like a tear in my eye. You know, there's times that I've been like that where I've just been just like so like off the center. And before Alcoholics Anonymous, like I was like that all my life. I was always just very self-centered. Like if I had a DeLorean time machine and I went back to that 12-year-old kid, I would just say, get a drink in you. You'll be all right. Just have a drink. And thank God for booze and drugs. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, but thank God for booze and drugs. That stuff preserved my sanity. It gave me a life. I was so isolated. You could have fried eggs in the back of my neck. I had grown up in Ireland. And I hear in America, America's not different. It's not that much different from Ireland with the bullies and stuff. I was a walking target. I got an awful ration from people. You know, school was just like, it's like a prison sentence. I never did time. I never went to any penitentiaries or prisons or anything. But I used to say, like, I'll just kill myself. If I ever get to that point, I'll just kill myself. That's the way I thought. And it wasn't anything dramatic. Like, it was just a very nonchalant, I'll just end it. And there's no point going on because I don't want to go into one of those places. And I grew up in Ireland, and I was adopted into a family full of love, just good people. You know, it was like the Waltons compared to some of the stories I've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. My family was like the Waltons. It was just, I would say the biological background that I know nothing about is probably riddled with alcoholism. I would imagine so. And I was given a good opportunity. The mother, she was just, she wanted to make sure that I had a good home. And I was adopted into this family that were just kind, principled people. No alcoholism in that family whatsoever. And I got to a point where it's like, what is wrong with Richard? Why is Richard behaving like this? And I was just so shy and awkward in school and stuff. And see, like, presentations, like, stand in the front of a group of people like this, like, even, like, a much smaller group, like, 30 pupils in a classroom. Like, I remember doing presentations, and it was just like the stuff would have went up like this. Like that. Come on, Richard, now get that down. Come on, put it down. We have to see your face. And I would have just like, just subconsciously, I just sort of went back up again. I was like, today we're going to talk about snakes. And I have done a presentation on snakes, a reptile. And I would the thing would have just went up again over my face. And I couldn't help myself. In the class, we're all sniggering, and just like they thought it was great. And I was, it was excruciating. The pain of that there was rough. And I, like in situations like that, I would have needed just a wee drink. A wee drink would have got me through that, and I would have been okay. And I, every time I, like when people hear my accent here in America, I did Uber for a while, they automatically think that I know about soccer. And I never did. I never had a clue about soccer. I had two left feet, and it was mandatory. You know, we had to go out and play. In primary school, we had to go out at lunchtime and kick the ball around. And I was, if the truth be told, I have a phobia of soccer. I have a lot of phobias. You know, a phobia of podiums. And here I am. Here I am on the podium. But I tell you, I was when the ball came near me, I just kicked it the hell away from me. I didn't care where it went. And people didn't. My Treehouse Dave always talks about that. You know, you take Susie with the crutches, and we'll take Dave. I was just as a result of that, there, I didn't want to watch it. You know, it was on TV. I was just like, I switched it off, and I was. We're fantasy addicts as well. You know, alcoholics. You know, and I escaped into that, the A-Team and Knight Rider and the Fall Guy, Starsky and Hutch. American TV, it's no wonder I ended up here in Los Angeles, as I was just the $6 million man, all that stuff. The man from Atlantis. I used to watch all that stuff. My ma used to say, don't let the TV rule your life, son. You're going to get square eyes. Get away from that TV. You're going to get square eyes. I was just I heard Russell Brand speak one time, and he was talking about a thing. You may chastise me in this classroom now, sir, but I will be home eating my wagon wheel later on watching my programs. And that's the way it was. I would have taken, the teachers, I mean, they give you a wee bit of a byball, you know, whenever you're shy and awkward and stuff like that there. But there was times I can remember teachers putting me on the spot and saying, no, tell the classroom. What is so important out that window? Tell everybody what you're looking at. Tell everybody in the class what you're looking at. And I remember it was like a hedgehog. We all have a program before we get the Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just not the 12 steps. And my program was just turn into a hedgehog. You know, I just got into this hedgehog kind of mentality where it's just if I wish this situation to disappear, it'll just leave me alone. And I can remember going into states like that where I was just looking at my picking my nails and stuff. I don't know, sir. I don't know. And I didn't know. I was just daydreaming and probably thinking about the Incredible Hulk is going to be on that night. I was way off in cuckoo land. And then when booze came on the scene, I mean, see, before booze, it was like obsessions of the mind. Chuck Chamberlain talks about the obsessions of the mind. If the alcoholic's not drinking and they're not doing a spiritual way of life, they're going to suffer from obsessions of the mind. And I was, there were so many, like WWF wrestling. I watched all that, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, The Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan and all them guys. I was just a big boss man. I used to, a SummerSlam and the WrestleMania and Survivor Series. And I had pen pals and all I was talking to all around the world. And I was into that in a big way. And seeing when booze came on the scene, all that went out the window. I couldn't do the soccer. It was terrible at football. Two left feet, and I just I never wanted to get into it. But I did well at the swimming. And I swam for Northern Ireland. I ended up swimming for Northern Ireland, and I had my first drink in 1990. It was October of 1990, and we were in a place called Spanish Island called Tenerife. And I was sitting in the room and. And I remember them, that was the same as school, you know, a ration. I just took a ration from those guys as well. You know, I was such a target, you know, I was just so neurotic and so into myself that I was such a target for those guys. And I remember, there was one Kevin Wilson. He's been on every single inventory I've ever done, this guy. The resentment that I had against that fella, and I still, if he came in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous, if he came in walking through that door right now, I'd be glad to see him, because it's AA. But I mean, that guy, it was every time I got the title, the Lone Ranger, he would have called me. And he did that, a thing from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I was like, that's not even the Lone Ranger. But I could never say that. You know, he didn't know the difference. He didn't know TV and film the way I knew it, you know. And I was I wanted to fight him, you know. I remember thinking, geez, if I had the courage to put you in your place, I would. But instead, I went into myself, and I was like that. It's like that film, if you ever seen that movie, Total Recall, with Schwarzenegger. And he's dressed up as a woman and he's going through this customs. And Michael Ironside's character, he's asking a bunch of questions, but Schwarzenegger's only programmed to answer a couple of questions. And he gets asked the third question and he just starts like, you know, going like crazy, his face starts distorting stuff. And I was like that all the time. You know, somebody would have just like said, like, you know, what time is our meet tomorrow? What time are we supposed to meet at in the lobby at the hotel? And I was, I don't know. I would have just freaked out. You know, I was just so into myself. And Booze fixed all that. Booze so fixed that there. It was brilliant. It was tailor-made for a wee fella like me. The way I was, that stuff was just tailor-made. It was like three bags of cement off my shoulders. I loved it. I loved the effect produced by alcohol. And I would still be doing it today if I could. It chewed me up and it spat me out. And I only got 7 years. I got 7 years of drinking. And I felt, when I got the Alcoholics Anonymous at age 21, I felt very jealous. A lot of guys in the room, in Ireland, I got sober in Ireland, Northern Ireland, and a lot of the guys had 30, 40 years drinking. I was like, how the hell did they last that long? I was jealous. I felt jealous. I wish I could last 40 years. You know, and I was like, I thought I got a bum deal, like, you know, 7 years. Nobody wants, it's good to see the new, I know there's two new people here. It's good to see the new people here, but nobody wants to come in through them doors. It's desperation. And I run about like a lunatic. I mean, I was very, very antisocial. My drinking, I mean, Ireland is a hard place to stand out for drinking. It really is. And I did, I stood out. Like, I was like a, what's that thing that Ralph White says? Like, I drank alcohol to fit in, but it made me stand out. And that's the way it was. I can remember going into bars, and I got off a bus one time thinking, like, I had a buddy who was a chef. And I remember getting off the bus, and I thought, oh, I'll call and see Rob here, see what he's at. And I went into the bar, and I was like, I just, like, walked into the kitchen where he was in the back. I said, Rob, how you doing, man? You keeping all right? Expecting people to be glad to see me. And they weren't. They were not glad to see me at all. And I did that like at 3 o'clock in the morning, people's houses and all, waking up. It was just an absolute nightmare. But I remember Rob, there's a whole lot of them things that stick in my mind. I'll never forget them. I remember Rob, like, he brought his friend over. He said, come here, you got to meet this fella. And see, like, I used to fall asleep in parties and stuff, and they used to shave off my eyebrows. And I had, at that particular time, I had a black eye and one eyebrow. And Rob says, you got to come and meet this fella. And I remember, I was like, went out to the bar, and I remember sitting in the bar stool, and Rob was like, this is the maddest bastard you'll ever meet in your life. And I felt like it was, like, such a compliment. I mean, I remember, like, it was a sense of identity. I felt like, you know, he's right. I'm just mental. I'm just a mental, you know, and it was, see, if I seen that going on today, I'd be like, oh, leave that fella alone. Leave that poor fella alone. He's only got one eyebrow and he's got a black eye. Leave him alone. I was just like the sensible striker, they used to call me. I got so many titles like that. The sensible striker. And when I got the Alcoholics Anonymous, a sponsor used to call me Quasimodo. Because all that neurosis, it was back tenfold. I mean, that fear was just like, it was excruciating fear. That fear was, it was terrible. I mean, I could live with the vomit and the blood. Like, I was doing that regular. That didn't bother me. I mean, the summonses that were coming, police summonses would have came to different addresses that I'd been staying at. And I remember one time they went to my father's place and he read it out to me. And I said, that wasn't me. I don't know who that was. I have no idea who that was. My father read this whole summons, a police summons, that Mr. Crawford was very apologetic for what he had said to the police. But then he turned very aggressive towards the police. Then he was apologetic again. But then he turned aggressive again. And I remember my dad reading that out. And my father was a humble man. He was a good, good man. He died when I was 2 years sober in 2000. He died. And I remember him reading that stuff out. And I was mortified. But, I mean, see the way I was at? Just, like, that low self-esteem. Like, that real, like, hole in the soul. Spiritual malady. just covering it up with bravado. Just like, I don't know who that was, no idea. Like in the height of the troubles and just disappearing for weeks. And I couldn't even account where I was, never mind anybody else. But it was painful living, like, and that, see, in between the benders, it was the fear. That was the fear that brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous eventually. It was all that stuff I could live with, the summonses, the vomit, the blood, and all that stuff. Like, it was like a hurting, frothy emotional appeal seldom sufficed. It sufficed on the 20th of December, 97. You know, it doesn't say it never sufficed. It seldom sufficed. And I, on the 20th of December, 1997, I had more loyalty to three guys that I just met. Three head kisses, by the way. Absolute lunatics. I had more loyalty to these three lunatics that I just met in a bar. They were going to go to a club that I wanted to go to. Then I had my own mother. I know, and I was not far from her place. And I hadn't seen her in a while. And I said to these head kisses, like, I'll go around here and see my ma for a bit, and I'll get some money and I'll be back. And I never made it back to that bar. The 20th of December, 97, I ended up in an AA meeting that night. And I wish I could celebrate from that time. It was 98 that I was going to meetings and stuff, but I smoked a wee bit of marijuana in my first few months. And I mean, I run it by my sponsor and stuff like that. There, I said to Teddy, like, here, what's the crack with this marijuana? Like, are we allowed to smoke a wee bit of blow here and there? It was insecurities. I met a guy on the bus that I used to smoke blow with, and he was asking me about AA and stuff, and I says, these guys in AA, they talk about a day at a time, but they're really talking about the rest of their lives, because a lot of these guys are like 20, 30 years sober. And he said, well, what about the marijuana? And you smoke that? I said, oh, of course, aye. We're allowed to. So it's only about drinking. AA is just about drinking. They don't care. And I said to Teddy, like, what are we going to do about, do you mind if I just get a wee bit of smoke off this boy on the bus? Because I see him all the time, and he's always asking me about the smoking. And Teddy said to me, can you get me a bit too? And I got Teddy some marijuana. And I, you know, he smoked it, and I smoked it, you know, like, it wasn't like a social thing, you know, and I don't know what I was doing. I mean, that first few months, I mean, I was going to meetings and stuff, and I was going through the steps, but it was like, I smoked that stuff by myself, and I was paranoid as hell. I was just absolutely, see a spiritual way of life, it does not mix with that stuff. When, like, I was locking doors, and I was checking doors, and I don't have OCD. I mean, like, maybe a mild form of it, but I mean, like, I was really bad. That the way I was, like, I was crazy. And I, you know, Teddy was getting me to do bits and pieces, like Ezekiel talked about there, you know, like bits and pieces of service. And there was times that I thought, geez, I have enough problems in my life without 12 more. I don't have the time to go through, like, I don't know, it was like, it was so much immaturity. Like, it talks in the 12 and 12 about this study that was done by scientists on the alcoholic mentality, and the thing that they found in common with these alcoholic people is their very childlike emotion. Emotional, childlike, like immature emotions and grandiose. And I was that last year of my drinking, now I went back and I made amends to my mother and father, but see, that last year of my drinking, they asked me to look after a black Labrador. That's what I was asked to do. They gave me the keys for their house, and they trusted me. They trusted me to look at, to feed that black Labrador. That was all I had to do. And they came back, and that house was absolutely wrecked. It was trashed. You know, like, I'm sure some of you have maybe heard about the paramilitary organizations and stuff. There's probably just as many gangs in Compton, like I would imagine, but these guys were just like, they came off a bus. There was a bus from one of these clubs, and they came off the bus and they came into the house, and they set the barbecue up in the living room, and they put all the cushions on top of the barbecue. They spiked the dog with acid. That black Labrador got spiked with acid. And they got my dad's golf clubs they had got in America, tailor-made. If anybody's into the golf, and there were tailor-made golf clubs, they lined up all my mother's perfume out the back, and they smashed it all with the golf clubs. They broke the golf clubs. there's a wee ferret that I had running about the house that I got off of gypsies, and they killed it. They killed the ferret, and they bleached. There was koi fish out the back, and they bleached the koi fish, and they were all floating. And they smashed the windows, and they were pretending that the sugar and the flour from the cupboards was cocaine, and they were just like throwing it around the place. Here, get a wee sniff of that, get a wee snort of that. And the place, I remember looking at that there, just like sitting in the corner, just out of my tree. I remember watching these guys running about in my mother and father's house. And it was like a doctor's opinion talks about, like, outright mental defective and full flight from reality. I was just like looking at it as if it was like a cartoon or a dream or something. I mean, I had no sense of responsibility. And I see the reality of that whole thing. I remember my father's eyes when he came back. He came back from that trip. And I remember he sat me down. And I could see the hurt in his face. And I had a girl over from London that I'd met in Ibiza. And that trip to Ibiza was a blackout. I really don't remember much. But the first encounter I had with Alcoholics Anonymous, I told all the guys in AA that I had this trip to Ibiza coming up. That's why I couldn't really join AA at the minute. And that trip to Ibiza was a blackout. I broke my thumb the first day, and I don't remember how I did it. And I had to get a pin put in the thumb, and it was a nightmare. But I mean, there was just one thing after another, and I remember making an amends for that. But I mean, see, at that time, I remember going over to the Swiss Chalet. It's no longer there. A wee bar that I used to go to, and I remember there was a guy that I went to primary school with, and going into that bar with a bunch of twos and ones, like coppers, and just setting them all down. And that guy I was in primary school with, like, I looked at him, but like I needed a drink to face my father coming back from that trip. I remember looking at him, and I was like, this smirk, this condescending smirk on his face. And I handed all the twos and ones, and I says, like, here, just whatever that gets me, man, just give me whatever that gets me. And he said, what do you want? And I couldn't tell him what I wanted. I was just so out of it. And looking at my father's eyes when he got back from that trip, it was like reality just hit me up in the face. There was a whole lot of times like that. I remember coming back from Ibiza and my mother getting her on the phone. There was this surge of emotion that just came through me. She said, hi, son, are you all right? I said, we just got back here. We're at the airport. Can you just come over? There's me and a couple of lads here. Is there any chance you could pick it up at the airport? Are you doing okay, son? Are you all right? We just got back from Ibiza. But are you okay, son? And I remember her. It was like a soldier coming back from war, or to see the loved ones for the first time. It was almost like there was just so much trauma and the hell raising that was going on. This surge of emotion, I couldn't control it. I was just like, God, it was like reality just hit me a slap in the face every so often. And I came in the Alcoholics Anonymous, like I shared there, I did not want to be here. And that guy, Teddy, was a humble gangster. If there's such a thing as a humble gangster, it will be Teddy. Like an Irish version of Danny Trejo. He was just a rough, like he would have broken some legs at a time. Those organizations back there, he probably would have been part of it. Now, he didn't talk about it much, but he would have been part of that whole thing. And he would have broken some legs at a time, but I got in with him, and thank God for him. Sponsorships is like going into a dark cave and just shine the torch. And Teddy said that to me. He says, like, I'm going to shine the torch, you're going to do the digging. You're going to do the work, but I will shine the torch and I'll show you where you got to do the work. Me and Teddy would have went through the program, and sometimes like the meeting on the way to the meeting was sometimes better than the actual meeting. And I wasn't to take away from the meeting, because it was good meetings we were going to. But we would have judged the meetings by their cookies. If they had good cookies, we'll be back. And Teddy, he was a good dude now. Well, Teddy's still alive now. He is. He's still about, but he doesn't do meetings anymore. And he was a blessing to me. There's a saying, and you don't hear it much in America, but they say it all the time over there, never forget the man that took you to your first meeting, or woman in that case. And for me, it was Teddy Gall. Teddy Gall was such a blessing. He was such a blessing to me. And I remember doing like what I'm doing here tonight, going to speak in front of a group, a much smaller group than this. And I got to the meeting, and Teddy was driving. I'd lost my license for drink driving. And Teddy was driving, and I was, Braveheart had come out not too long ago at that time. Braveheart had just come out a couple of years. And I loved the music, the Braveheart and Titanic and things like that. And I was listening to that. And I says, Teddy, hold on a wee second here. Like, you know, like what you're talking about. Like, I'm trying to get spiritual here. I'm trying to listen to this music here to get. I'm going to do this talk tonight. And I just want to get in a proper place. And Teddy would have just sort of laughed to himself and then went quiet. I got to the meeting that night and I was just green. I was green with fear. And there was a fella, Lindsay, like Johnny Cash, a boy named Sue, like a boy named Lindsay. And he took a look at me and he says, Ricky, you don't have to do this if you don't want to. It's not that important. I got somebody else if you don't want to do the talk tonight. And I said, I maybe we'll take a back seat then, Lindsay, if you don't mind. I'll take a back seat. And I said to Teddy, and Teddy said, no, you'll get up there or I'll break your effing legs. And I got up there, and I tell you, like, I just, we could smoke in the meetings back then. And I was just burning a hole in the white cup, the wee white coffee cup. Just kept burning the hole. And whatever came out of me, whatever I said, everybody was identifying. You know, when it came, everybody else turned to share. Everybody was saying, like, oh, I think you said about Ibiza, Ricky. I remember when I did that thing with the fire extinguisher you're talking about. I did that too. And I see the feeling that I had that night. If you could sell it, you would make a fortune. It was a spiritual feeling. And I mean, I was like going back in the car with Teddy, just like I was on cloud nine. It was like a bottle of whiskey. And that's what I was seeking. The whole time I was out there drinking and drugging, like, that's what I was looking for. I was just looking for it in the wrong places. It was a low-level search for God. I was just looking for God in the wrong places. You know, and Teddy was getting me introduced to this power greater than me. And like, I felt like I was going backwards. I did feel like I was going backwards. And I remember saying to Teddy, there was a lot of times I said to Teddy, I know the answer is in 12 steps. I'm just not getting it. For some reason, I'm not getting it. I just don't know why. Like, I'm going over to my mother and I'm going over to my father and I'm talking to them and having dinner with them. And I just cannot find the strength to bring the love that I'm supposed to bring to them. I just don't have it. And I remember he says, well, Ricky, it's harder not to. He would have said things like that. He says, we do this work and that's what's going to give you the power and the strength to do things like that you can't do because you're powerless. And it wasn't just that it was powerless over booze, I'm powerless over me. You know, like I had to really surrender and there was an awful lot of growing up. I mean, like I remember sitting at Teddy's doing step work and it was the same thing, going back into school again. Where Teddy was saying instead of the teacher, Ricky, what is it you're looking at out that window? What are you looking at? And I remember thinking, like, I'm supposed to be honest here. And I remember telling Teddy the whole story of the movie that he just watched, Men in Black. And I was telling Teddy, you know, this is a gangster of a fella. Like, and I'm telling Teddy about Men in Black. And I'm saying about these space aliens and stuff. And he took a look at me. He says, Ricky, are you serious about this way of life? Or are you not? Because it's all right if you're not. And there were so many things like that there. And I was running about these meetings with Teddy, and an opportunity came up for me to come over to America. There was a couple of girls in the home group that were over here, and I was never involved with them girls. We're good friends of mine. And I came over and I visited them, and I met a girl from over in the Culver City. That's where I was at, and I was over there staying in Culver City, and I was walking to that Marina Center every day. And I met this girl in AA, and she was obsessed with Ireland. I mean, her idea of Ireland was like unicorns and rainbows compared to the real Ireland. It was just like castles and palaces. Like, is there really castles over there? You know, like I kind of think. And these guys were all saying, like, hey, I just got to warn you, man. Like, she's a Jewish princess. This girl is a valley girl. She's a Jewish princess. And I thought, like, it was a real compliment. You know, and she moved over to Ireland to be with me, and she couldn't get the green card and all that. Like, after a few months, the immigration thing kicked in, and I thought, you know what, I'll come over to America. And, I mean, that was... that you couldn't get a more alcoholic relationship than me and that girl. She had bipolar disorder. I'd never heard of the bipolar disorder until I came here. I'm sure they have it. They just... call people drunk or something. Oh, they gotta be something totally different. But me and her, like, geez, it was just like we fought like cat and dog. Me and that girl, it was mustard, absolute mustard. And I got in with a boy. Mark maybe knows this boy, Mike Finnegan. He passed away there. It brought tears to me. Last year I was over at Roxbury and I seen all the faces. It shows you Chuck Chamberlain and all the different ones over the years that have passed away. I did not expect to see Mike Finnegan on there. And I was like, that's how I learned he'd passed. And I wish I'd have spent more time with that man, you know. He was a good man. But these guys, I had no car when I first got here, and me and her were living in a wee studio apartment, killing each other daily. And I called Mike. Before I got to Mike, these guys were picking me up and taking me over to that Roxbury men's stag. And they were like, oh man, you got to talk to Mike Finnegan, man. He's American-Irish, man. He will straighten you out, man. He will straighten you out. And I remember, like, I said, all right, I'll talk to this Mike Finnegan guy. All right, let's see what he has to say here. I mean, I was like, oh, this mentality. You ever hear that? You hear, like, you go somewhere else and they're not doing AA, right? You hear that all the time in AA. Well, I thought, I love Alcoholics Anonymous here. This is my home here in Los Angeles. Like, for years, I've been here 20 years now. But at that time, I was like, these people are way too colorful. They're way too happy. You know, it's like, I would say if you just went over to Ireland, you'd probably say the opposite. These people are a bit morbid. And I was like, I was calling home. I was constantly calling home, and I was saying, like, I swear to God, man, they're singing in the meetings. They're singing Happy Birthday, and it's like, it's just lame. Liam's not a word that we would use back there, but that's what I was trying to put across. And I remember, like, they were condoning it. All them boys in Ireland were, like, patting me on the back, saying, like, how are you staying sober in that? That sounds like a circus over there, Ricky. I says, like, Bill and Bob would roll in a grave if I seen what's going on over here. That's where I started, you know. It's like looking down on people from the gutter, you know, that kind of mentality. And I... Anyway, I got in with Mike Finnegan, and he was my sponsor for 5 minutes or so. And I called him one day, and I was saying, like, oh, me and her, we had a terrible fight there again. It was awful. And he says, well, what was it this time? And I said, I didn't like her shoes. I didn't like, she was wearing these, like, really weird-looking shoes. And and I was like, I hid their shoes. I hid them, like, where she couldn't see them. And I... she was like looking for them, and I was like, I was trying to help her look for them, you know. I was. He says, "Oh man, I'll tell you what your problem is, man. Open your big book. I'll show you page 52, and the big book is the bedevilments, man. I'm going to show you where you're living right now." And I said, "Oh, Mike, I don't know where my big book is. To be honest, I've probably threw it at her last night. I don't know where it is." And he said, "That's your goddamn problem right there." And he hung up the phone. I was like, am I going to go back to Ireland here? Because this is ridiculous. This sobriety over here. And I thank God I surrendered into it, because, I mean, I was going over to that Roxbury, and I was like, me and her were just killing each other every day. I got in with a fella, Chuck Guerrero. That was a guy that helped me the most. Over all the years and all the sponsors that I've had over the years. I was in with Chuck yesterday, actually. I'm sure he's probably spoke over here at some point, but he doesn't speak much nowadays, but I mean, that was a man, the manic Hispanic. That's what they called him, the manic Hispanic, sponsor on steroids. And he was so active, that guy. And he pulled me aside one night and he says, guys like me and you, Ricky, have to go the extra mile. We'll have to really make us a piece of business. We got to dig the heels in. And I got in with that guy, and he got me involved with Cry Help, picking guys up. Every time you go to a meeting, Ricky, fill your car up with newcomers. Go over there. And if you don't like the way they're running things over there, then just go to the local park and pick up one of the drunks over there. And if he pukes in your car, then it's a privilege. I remember Chuck used to say things like that. He's mellowed a lot now. Chuck wouldn't say things like that now, but at that point he did, when he was in with Bob. And, geez, he helped me. He helped me tremendously. Got me into H&I. I got cleared for jails. I did jails for a good over 10 years. I was doing jails. I'm still doing H&I, but I'm just not doing jails at the minute. But that was a man that that really he got me in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was powerful. I mean, I can pinpoint all the places in my life where I've got dislocated from this power. I've done the inventory, and I've seen it so many times. And there was a girl that I got involved with, and she got drunk. I met her in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stayed with her. I stayed with her for a lot longer than I should have.
I loved her, I really did. I fell in love with a girl, and she was a quality girl, good person. And I would, Carla just started going with Doug at the time. And I'm sure some of you just would know Carla and Doug. And I talked to Carla every day at the time. I remember talking to Carla and saying, and Carla would have said things like, you know, if she had cancer, would you just turn your back on her? I said, no, wouldn't, no. It's the same thing, Ricky, she's got a fatal illness. And this girl, Christine, had a fatal illness, and it damn near took me out. The whole thing near took me out. In 2000, like, Carla always has that thing in her story where they got married about the time they should have broke up. And me and this girl moved to San Diego. Around the time we should have broke up, we moved to San Diego. And I was so just off the cuff. It was a sunrise meeting. Mark, you've spoke over there a few times. And there was a guy from San Diego, Joe F., he came down from San Diego, and I thought, Jesus, San Diego would be a good spot to go to. It was a total geographic. I was more embarrassed about her drinking than she was. And she had no passion for Alcoholics Anonymous. She married a guy in San Diego. I ended up going back to Ireland, and she married some dude over there. But I remember us going to San Diego, and it was back into that, you know, that separation. I got into that separation, and it was... I got to meet a guy, Ken Devaney, was a guy that sponsored me when I was over there, and that was another blessing. I've always been blessed with good people in Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it be here or Ireland. And last year, I went right across America. I mean, that pandemic was another time. It was just a real rough spot. And I had to dig the heels in. I mean, I was just, I felt like it was getting back into that, like it was a brick in my chest. I was stuck in Ireland at that time. See, when the pandemic hit, I mean, it was like a sense of relief for the previous 2 years that I just lived. When I remember going on to that Zoom, when Zoom kicked off, I was going to a meeting, Colfax and Addison, I started going to, like the 7 a.m. meeting was at 3 p.m. in Ireland. And I was going on there, and there was a woman came on, I can't remember who it was, but she came on and she was so emotional. She says, like, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I need to be around people. I cannot do this where I'm like looking at a screen. I got to be around real people. I got to have interaction. And Danny Marsh came on and he was like saying, like, who's the leader here? Who are we supposed to be following here? Like, what are we doing here? And I was just like so happy that I'm getting my American sobriety just coming through a Zoom meeting in Ireland. I was stuck there for 2 years because of my green card. I went back there without permission, and I ended up, I had to bounce the whole thing over to London for me to go to see the consulate over there. And I see when the Zoom thing kicked off, it was a blessing. I didn't get, like, if I can't get over to America to get to my meetings, America came to me. I mean, I love the sobriety that we have here. I mean, I think some of the Irish guys back there could use a bit of the singing. They need a bit of it. You know, some of the meetings back there, you get frowned upon. Like, even mention the guy, the American, the guy over in L.A., they do the singing. And they go, what are they doing over there? Like, that's a shambles. How do you stand sober in that? And I thank God for it. You know, there's a guy, Joe, in Ballymena, and he used to say, like, I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for God. You know, my mother, she's crying different types of tears. This today, she was just over there, and Ezekiel had us over the Impact for Thanksgiving. I mean, now that woman was tortured, absolutely tortured. The things that used to come out of me, seemed like when I was really drunk, and there's things used to come out of me when I was, it was nasty. You know, I made amends for all that, but it's never going to be done. Those amends are going to be going on the rest of my life and the rest of her life. I was just back there over Christmas, and. I mean, it's just like she's given me, she gave me a 10-year, she gave me a 15-year, she gave me a 20-year medallion. And she, you can see the tears in her. It's a totally different type of tears that woman's crying today. And that's all thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I wouldn't have a life that I have today. And anybody that cares a tuppence about me at all, and they don't know anything about it, just made an amends back there to a girl that I was with, a fiancé actually. I made amends to her when I was back there, and she loves Alcoholics Anonymous for what it's done in my life. Anybody that cares a tuppence about me at all loves Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, we might be the only example, each one of us as an individual, we might be the only example of a big book that anybody sees. You know, and I've seen situations where it's like, I remember somebody said in a meeting one time, like, if you get me in the wrong moment, I look like I've never even been introduced to a spiritual way of life. I've never known what a spiritual principle is. And it's like, last night at Rose City Speakers, the woman was saying, like, she's just totally mallowed with that whole road rage thing. I mean, that's something that's like, that's caused me strife. Like, in Ireland, it's just like everybody's like letting each other go. Oh, yeah, go ahead there. Away you go there. You go first. And over here, it's just like everybody's trying to cut you off. Everybody's just like, it's like dog eat dog. But it's me that has to surrender me. There's nobody in this room. Everybody in this room could inspire me one by one. But nobody in this room can surrender me. It's an inside job for each of us. But it's good to be here. And thanks again, Mark, for asking me. Cheers. All right. All right.